Hello, hello out there, and welcome listeners to the next episode of the Pre-Modcast 2021 edition. Season 2 begins, and I'm here to join my good friends, Mr. Andrew Walker.
F-2020.
And Mr. Jared Doucette.
You shall not pass!
Unless you're vaccinated.
which I'm getting in 2 days from now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I'll be my first dose.
Because of work?
Yep. I just got the approval like yesterday, so I get 2 days from now. By the time this is out, I will have my first dose of the vaccination, which is kind of exciting.
Nice.
I know some people that have got it, make sure you like plan for maybe a day off, because for some people it beats them up.
The first one's a pretty sore arm, and then my mom's gotten both doses. She said the second one was definitely worse. But it's not like she felt a little like slow, a little groggy, you know. Wasn't anything bad, but and she's 70 years old, so like you know, she's the one that's probably going to get hit harder than, you know, you or I or any.
I just know, like, one of my staff's trained EMT, so they've been having her work, like, volunteer and do 13 hours a day, like, half the work week on top of
I've been doing a bunch of extra shifts because we're pretty low. Like, if anyone even has, like, the sniffles, they send you home for 2 weeks, basically.
Yeah.
They got to really be really sure of it, so. They're doing what they can.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably one of the last people in New Jersey that's going to get it just because I'm so low on the list.
Right.
There is no reason for them to give it to me. Like, I can work from home.
Yep.
I'm young. I don't do anything that requires me to go out. So, yeah, they're not giving me one until everyone else is taken care of.
Yep.
I mean, there's stories of, like, them, like, wasting these poor vaccines because people sign up and not like get the second dose, or like they're taking them out too early because it's a very fine amount of time with defrosted. So logistically, it's got to be very tough, and I feel bad. Yeah. But like, you know, at the same time, I'm sure everyone's doing what they can. And on top of that, they still need people to do the testing too.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So people still need to be running tests. So they need more staff members. It's a very tough thing.
I mean, something on this large of a scale, it's like the fact that it's even working as well as it is amazing.
I know somebody who's got they called in and they're like, "We have an appointment for you in May." Did that sound? I know. It was like, okay, you have to wait till May. But like you said, it stinks, whereas like you've got lots of people signed up for it and that's why it's extended into May, but then something will come up and they'll drop off the list, but the list won't know because they probably won't call and be like, oh, I don't need that April appointment.
Right.
Yeah, which is tough.
Well,
but,
you know, maybe by fall we'll be having in-person magic tournaments.
I'm bullish around, like, you know, for Labor Day, you know. Labor Day is what I'm thinking.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. So. Yep. As long as, and I highly recommend everyone does it, it's going to be good for everybody. If this is how we get out of this, right? So
exactly.
Yes.
So the reason why I dropped the Gandalf quote today is that I happened to just like, because I've been working so many like weird night shifts and it gets a little slow at night. I was like looking for something to kind of check out on the iPad, and I haven't watched like the Lord of the Rings in a while. Mm-hmm. Man, those are good movies. Like, those are just awesome.
Phenomenal.
They're just so good.
Yeah.
I just like then I go down like the Wikipedia, like, you know, Middle Earth like rabbit hole, and I'm like, wait, so Gandalf's not a wizard, he's a something else. Like, I just like the Tolkien history that like Stephen Colbert's like apparently a professor at, like,
we need to have Flint on for this.
Oh, really? Oh,
Flint is a huge Lord of the Rings head.
I would love to. You know, it's interesting because like I actually am one of those people that I'm always like, okay, the book is always better. I think the movies might be better than the books in this case. Like, they're so good.
We're gonna be having people screaming at their headphones.
I'm sure,
this, but
like, you know,
I totally agree.
Pre-Modcast doesn't condone or non-condone his choices.
But like,
these are the views of the individuals.
Speaking them, yes,
exactly.
All of us.
But like, it's just like for me, like the books are just so dense. You know, Tolkien's a prolific world builder. I don't know if he's the best writer, but like, also like they're sacred. Like, you know, they're absolutely sacred to all these people because it basically was the start of the fantasy genre. You know, for the most part.
Oh
yeah, as far as mainstream
groundbreaking
fantasy.
You can't deny the impact that they had. You can't deny how incredible what they created is. But when it really comes down to it, if you're not super into them, they're pretty slow.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I've only been able to listen to them on audiobook. I haven't been able to sit down and read them because I can't get out of the Shire. Like, I spend fucking 150 pages. Yeah, they're still talking about, you know, on concerning hobbits. And they've got, you know, in the book, the whole part with Sam and Frodo just leaving the Shire, they stop and describe every tree they see on the way.
Well, it's like if you read Les Mis, the unannotated version, the full length.
Oh, I mean,
it's like 50 pages in, and then it's like, okay, he's stolen the, like, the candlesticks. And I'm like, in the short version, that's like 12 pages in. This is like 50. It's like, holy crap.
You don't even get to Tom Bombadil, which is still like the beginning of the book.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Whereas conversely, I think The Hobbit is a speed read. And the pacing of that book is unbelievable. Like,
I've
literally
read The Hobbit literally over a dozen times.
Oh, me too. It's a book
I just can't get through Lord of the Rings.
For The Hobbit though, it's only like 250 pages. Like, it's such a good read. But the way that the book progresses is like it introduces a new race every single chapter.
Yeah,
it's like hobbits, wizard, dwarf, trolls, like, you know, it just elves, like, it just keeps moving along really at an incredible pace.
So simple, so streamlined, but so effective.
But somehow it made for worse movies. I don't know how that happened, but at the same
time. I think we know how it happened.
Yeah.
Peter Jackson got way too indulgent.
Way too indulgent. It should have been two good movies and then that'd be done. Like,
It should have been one movie.
It would have been a packed one movie, but it could have been done.
Yeah, you're right. You could stretch it out to two. But I mean, it's shorter than, you know, any of the Lord of the Rings ones.
Yeah.
And, you know, those were each one movie.
Yeah. It's I'm curious to see what Amazon does with, like, their Lord of the Rings show that we've been hearing about forever. Mm-hmm. I don't know, like, if anything's happening with it, but
I haven't heard anything.
Oh, really? Yeah. No, they bought the rights to, like, produce Lord of the Rings content or, like, that kind of, like, media. So they're looking for their version of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I think they were going to look at some of the histories.
Amazon, they're pretty good.
Well, they've been doing well with The Boys is good. The Expanse is amazing. If anyone has read that series and watched that show, it's incredible sci-fi. So, highly recommend. But
nice.
Anyway.
All right. Well, let's get into Magic World.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we're hosting something.
We are.
Why don't you take it away?
So first things, on February 20th, we're going to be hosting the Winter Blast, a one-day online webcam-based pre-modern tournament where we'll have classic Swiss rounds, and we'll have a cut to top four, top eight, depending on how many people sign up. But it'll be like I ran it just like the Midsummer Revel back over the summer, and we'll just move it along and get people to play and all one day. It starts at 10 a.m. Eastern, which is about 4 p.m. in Europe, in most European time zones, and then 7 a.m. on the
West Coast.
So, I figured we needed another one. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to pick this day. I'm just going to pick it and stick it. And let's go for it. And gave people some heads up. And I thank you, Mike, for help with the art. Already got compliments on it. So
Nice.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it.
Any are we going to hold back on some of the surprise aspects that you haven't mentioned yet?
Well, I don't think I'm going to do any surprise aspects to it. I think we're going to have just keep it a straight pre-modern tournament. And
I meant commentary and all that.
Oh no, yeah, we're still finalizing, but it should be streamed. It's going to have commentary. We're going to have so if you can't play, you can watch the VODs later. But it should be. I'll get announce things more as we get a little closer and lock things down. But we're going to have some good commentators and such. Nice. But it'll be coming on soon.
Yeah, good streamer. So not me. Haha.
Yeah. No, it'll be well done. It'll be well done. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And February 20th starts at 7 a.m. on the West Coast, 10 a.m. on the East Coast of USA, then usually about 4 p.m. in most European time zones.
Do you need to sign up by?
I haven't set up the registration yet. That'll be probably about 10 days before the event starts. So I'll set that up. just so like I get people, you know, as close as possible. So just
keep your eye on the pre-modern
The pre-modern online page, online play group on Facebook, and the pre-modern group on Facebook as well. And I also, I'll post it to the Discord when that gets closer.
Nice.
I think there's a tournament channel or something like that for the Discord. So I just kind of put it in there. I'm not very active on the Discord, but if you do need to at me, I'm at Jerry Guy number 93. I don't even know what, but you know, but so anyway, I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be a good way to do it. Cause we do these monthlies, but like, to kind of get the feeling of like the one day match tournament again is kind of fun. And I highly recommend if you do it and get some friends to do it, get another whereby room where you guys go to in between rounds, and it feels like you're hanging out with your buddies like in between rounds.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's
so I've done it with some of the old school events where you get together, and if you have some time to kill between rounds, just be like, hey, we'll meet in this room or meet in this, Zoom chat or whatever.
Cool. And that's a great idea. Because that honestly is one of the best parts about in-person Magic tournaments.
Yeah. Just after chatting,
The match is over, like, how'd you do?
Exactly.
Got fucking mana screwed.
Yeah, I got mana screwed. I pulled my combo off on turn one and did some nasty stuff. So, I highly recommend it.
You should have seen what this guy's deck was doing.
Yeah.
I'll have to bring my trade binder and be like, hey, you want to do some trades?
trades.
You know what's weird is ever since I've started like doing old school and stuff again and pre-modern, like I don't even have a trade binder anymore. I haven't made a trade in easily 4 years, I think. Like it's just been
I buy listed all my modern bordered stuff, and the only, and I'm doing air quotes, binder that I have is just for like cards that I'm not going to play, but I like to look at. It's not for trade. It's just for me to gawk at once in a while.
My binder now is just like collective cards that I've gotten from going to tournaments that people signed or like prizes or whatever. I don't like to have like, I'm definitely one of those people that has to have all the art be the same on a card. So if like a scribble or an altar is done differently, I can't play with it. I don't know. It's just one part of my O's. You know, kick my opponent those edges. You know, and if they see two cards in my hand or something like that, and realize I played one not the other. You know,
right?
Exactly. Giving up percentage points here, but So I just I keep those in a binder, and those are it's kind of like my quote trophy case. So we'll see. But anyway, So again, February 20th. So save the date. Again, more will be coming out soon, and looking forward to it. It'll be a good time.
Yeah. Somewhat similarly, we want to mention that on the Facebook pre-modern group, Celine Burgers has been putting out feelers for organizing a monthly one-day event. I think right now it's just a poll, right? And so, if you're interested in that, comment on it, leave your, fill out the poll, that sort of thing. And hopefully that gets off the ground.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So any other, I don't think there's any other events. I mean, that kind of feels like the story of the past year.
It
like,
does, unfortunately.
Well, there's nothing going on.
Yeah, hopefully, like we said, sometime soon. But if anyone has anything for us, we'd love to promote your stuff. So just please let us know. And we'd be happy
absolutely.
To do it.
Give us a shout if you want something to get mentioned. So let's do pick up some brews.
Yeah. Anyone else want to go first? I actually have very little, finally. It's very
well,
unusual for me.
You're actually doing the opposite.
I know.
Sending me some lions.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. We made a little, pre-modcast transaction. So those will be in the mail tomorrow.
Nice.
Just for you.
Excellent.
Yeah. I said,
no rush.
There's
no old school tournament that I'm attending anytime soon.
Right.
But,
yeah.
Yeah. It was funny. We were talking about buying other cards off of websites that aren't TCG.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of casually mentioned that I luckily realized it was a scam before entering any information. But about a year or two ago, found some foreign black border Savannah Lions on this just random website. So be careful out there. Like only buy from trusted websites. 'Cause I started looking a little bit more into it, and I was seeing like typos on the website and stuff. I was like, this is a freaking scam. Yeah. This is definitely one of those things where they wrote some sort of script that takes like eBay things. Because it was like, why did they have magic cards and clothes on one website?
One-stop shopping, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Or one-stop identity theft.
Yeah, seriously. I had a thing where, like, I've always wanted to buy, like, this Lego Star Destroyer. I saw it, like, back when I was, like, a teenager, maybe in college. And I was like, man, I would love to, like, build a Star Destroyer, like, out of Legos. Yeah. And I found one online. It was, like, $90. It's normally, like, $500. Yeah. And it was kind of one of those things that I kind of like threw my money at it. I was like, okay, if this is real, then this is a great deal, and I hope it, like, you know, it works out. So I bought it, and then, like, I noticed that, like, it didn't charge my credit card right, and I was like, okay, cancel. Like, they just, you know, they charged me, like, $500 instead of, like, the $90 or whatever it's supposed to be.
Yep.
And I was like, okay, this was definitely a scam. So I let my credit card know. It was, like, immediately. I was like, I let my credit card know right away, and they were like, actually, I think they flagged it, too, like, immediately. They're like, yeah, you idiot, don't click that thing. I was like, it's like, okay. Just the nerd of me got so excited, sorry, you know.
Yeah, sorry, I'm a retail junkie.
Exactly. But yeah.
Yeah. So the bank called they again. They're French FBB revised.
Yeah, French FBB. Yeah, I got them probably like 4 years ago when I first got back into old school, and I just I gotta tell you, it was one of those play sets that took me a while to get together. Like I think it was over a year to get them all, and like because I can't have one French and one German because you know my opponent's gonna notice that.
Exactly.
So I had to make sure to get them all the same because I think I got two, and it was like to find the third and the fourth that was a little bit of the struggle. So.
Well, I thank you. I'm looking forward to putting them in because, as I said, it's one of the only old school creatures that I don't have black bordered.
Right.
You know, since I play exclusively green, white, and red in old school. And I have the FBB swords. I have the FBB bolts, which I got before all the spikes. So that was pretty great. And they will fit nicely into my various decks.
And FBB looks great for pre-modern too. Like it is like,
absolutely.
Spot on. Yeah.
If there is a viable Savannah Lions deck, well, I guess the five color zoo deck runs Savannah Lions.
But not and there was somebody who top 8ed or top 16 the monthly last month who played the blue white deck that you and I have been blue white weenie that we called was dead. You know?
So really?
Yeah, I tagged you in it.
We were talking about
exactly.
Quick pause like on the that. One. He's in the finals, and the finals will be this Saturday. Well, yeah, for you guys, it's good. This will be out afterwards. It's this Saturday. It's 7 a.m. Eastern.
Are you serious? It's in the finals? Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was because of holidays and stuff. It made it really problematic.
Mike, we had the deck. We had the deck. Yeah. We had to keep working on it.
I think I read the deck list.
Yeah, it's East Coast 7 a.m., best of five. So if you're listening to this and haven't viewed it, it should still be up on the Twitch page or, if not, my YouTube page.
What is that again?
Twitch is twitch.tv. /OS_KurtApe, or if you go to YouTube, just Mise Well Watch.
Got it.
Have the top 8 deck lists been posted?
Yeah,
all the
top 16s or whatever are posted and up on. I think it was an announcement.
Because we're talking December.
Yeah, for December, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like it's January 13th. Like, shouldn't they be recent?
Mike, don't tell the listeners that they're gonna realize how long it takes you to edit these things.
Oh crap! They're gonna be banging down my door.
We're dating ourselves. Oh shit.
That's very cool. I'll definitely have to check that out.
Yeah,
and
definitely
consider building the deck because you know I love a good white weenie deck.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, so I guess since I kind of kicked off, I also have completed my playsets of Onslaught, Polluted Delta, and Wooded Foothills.
Nice.
So the only things I don't have are the Bloodstained Mire, but I have honestly never played that color combo in pre-modern, so I don't see any reason to get it until I do.
I mean, you need it for like Sly, Red Black Goblins, or if you play like the Draco Explosion deck, because other than that, I don't think there is much use for it. But I mean, no, but if you're playing Red Deck Sly, like, you definitely need it, like, for Grimlovomancer. Like,
yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, the completionist in me is probably going to end up getting it, but at the same time, like, I went ahead, aside from the obvious, you know, you get more spending money at Christmas, and then mm-hmm. you get stimulus checks if you're American.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, they weren't crazy because I only needed to get like two more foothills and mm-hmm. one more delta.
Yeah. Right.
But,
I love how magic players use your stimulus checks to buy magic cards. Like,
yeah. Hey, you're stimulating the economy because yeah. you're giving it to someone else.
Exactly.
But, I have a sneaking suspicion that everything's going to get expensive once paper magic comes back.
Yeah.
Yeah, possibly. Like,
I don't look to me as a financial expert at all, but I'm telling you guys, I'm pretty sure, and we've already seen a bunch of spikes just yeah, in the last we week or so. I'm thinking that, like, if there's something you want that's been going up,
yeah, grab it.
Probably get it sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Somebody's like going to go idea. And drop a grand on 50 copies and be like, bing, they'll price up super quick.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Frickin', so part of me was like, you know what? I have enough that maybe I should get, like, a big ticket item. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe I should finally start getting Mox Diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
They're $400 now.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I'm so glad I bought mine.
That's down from the spike. For the high spike was, like, $650.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Got up that
Jesus
high?
Christ. Wow. Last I checked, they were, like, $250.
Yeah.
I think I got. I think I got like, all four.
Maybe I could get two.
There was
two.
A very brief spike when there was a buyout or something, and then it calmed down. But it's still higher than it was by like double or triple.
I think I got all mine for definitely less than $100 each.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish about, I would have picked up the fourth insane. One when it was less yeah. than it is now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think after I saw that, I was like, well, I guess I'm not building any Mox Diamond decks.
Yeah. I'm like, I've got three. It's good enough.
Yeah.
One of the cards that I just picked up is actually I picked up a gold border Gaia's Cradle.
Nice.
And and even so I actually got it for like $85, which seemed wow. like a good steal.
Yep.
So I actually found two of them on eBay, and I actually only wanted one, which is mm-hmm. I know weird, but like I wanted it for because I wanted to try out that like welder survival list mm-hmm. that Jens that we talked about not too yep. long ago. Mm-hmm. And also I what really sold me on it is that the Goblins list that made the finals of the Gauntlet series had a Gaia's Cradle, red green goblins. Huh. I was like, that kind of makes sense. Like, yeah, you need green does. Anyway. You play a lot of creatures, so like eventually, like this is a lot of colorless mana that just taps yep. for. And so I was like, that's not that bad at all. That could really help
it's
out.
It's not
like,
terrible. No. I mean, think about it. You know, people will play a Soul Ring or a Soul Land in various.
I've played Ancient Tomb. I played Ancient Tomb. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, sometimes you exactly. just need a way to yeah. speed it up. And yeah.
And it's a better Ancient Tomb by yeah. leaps and bounds.
Yeah, so I was like, you know what? If having one of those and I need green anyway, like yeah. I was like, this seemed worth it to me. I was like, this is a good one of purchase. I don't think I want to get the other three, you know, just to play elves, you know, a couple
yeah.
times.
But,
you know, like you know, Mike Arnold definitely, you know, and the other guys that love elves, it's your deck, go for it, you know, but...
Yep.
I think I'll just stay with the one, but the only other things that like my TCG player like page like the recent purchases is down to like four things. So
in the last 30 days.
In the last 30 days, yeah. So I also from that Goblins list was the Hearth Charms, which is a card like I hadn't thought about at all, but I was like that card's kind of perfect for that deck. It's not a goblin, but like the +1/+ all to all attacking creatures. Like you'll take a one mana anthem. The other version is a creature with power 2 or less is unblockable. So if you need to get a lackey in on turn 2, mm-hmm. here it is. Oh, and the last one is a destroys target artifact creature. 1 mana kill Dreadnought.
Wow.
Like those are three pretty good modes, you know?
I have honestly not even heard of that card.
I think there's
multiple charms, you know, in
there's
Mirage
so many.
And Visions that it's like you find out about one. And,
yeah.
And there were also charms in Onslaught Block, weren't they?
Those are, was it Onslaught or Invasion?
Well, Invasion had the dragon charms.
Yeah, dragon.
Invasion had the three-color charms.
Three-color charms.
But Onslaught had the, like, creature type-based charms. You know, there was like a cleric's one, a goblin's one, that sort of thing. Hearth Charm, I gotta check that out because that sounds pretty cool.
People gotta start looking at the charms more because like having three options on a card for one mana, even though they all seem to do small things, like are clearly like having choices is one of the best things about the game.
Yep.
Choices and decision making. Like even a card like Vision Charm, which we know basically all it really does is make Dreadnought work.
Yep.
The other options are like, hey, mill an opponent four. I actually used that not too long ago because someone like latent tutored for something to put it on top of their deck, and I was like, go away, you know. And then the other option is to turn all your all their lands of a certain type or something like that into something else. Mm-hmm. So it's like sometimes you can just time walk somebody, lock them out of their own mana. So like those charms are always worth looking at and seeing what else they can do.
Which sets her from. Is it Mirage or which set is the Hearth Charm from?
Let me look it up. I just had it up. I can't remember. I think it's Mirage. If I'm thinking of it correctly, it is. Yeah. Recent order history. I know. So. it is Visions actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
And like I got
the Vision box and started looking at it.
Yeah. So and then the last thing I picked up was those 7th edition Presidia Brasses. And I did my black bordering to them, and they look nice as well. Andrew, you get anything?
I haven't bought any. Well, I got a lot of like fillers that I had. I got my three sapphire medallions, so I can possibly make Blue Storm at some point. The biggest thing I had was I got a nice shipment back of signed stuff. I've got signed Finhorn Elves. What else is there?
Meltdowns, who did Finhorn?
Magrims. Finhorn was Justin Hampton.
Okay.
I got my Devourer signed, Cop Red Beta signed, Thermocarst, Ken Meyer Jr.'s Dark Rituals. I can finally play Evil Enchantress because the Cadaverous Blooms came back. Land Tax, Cognivores, and then for people who don't think I play black, I've got four Vindicates and four Natugo Shades. Helms of Awakening, Mindstone, Vindicate Siege Gang, is kind Commander, of
black, and then Tuco Thwarts, Shade is very black.
Yeah, Thwarts, Seal of Removals. So I got a nice pile of damaged cards.
Oh, nice.
So, do you basically at any given moment have about 60 or 70 cards in the artist's possessions?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I've got 33 with Carl Critchlow right now, alone.
Oh, nice.
Wow. And what are they charging? Was like
Quirion Elves. I can't think who, or Quirion Ranger. I can't remember who the artist is, but I got my four coming back soon. I'm like, yes.
Nice.
For you don't see that often, so I was like, sweet.
Wow.
So yeah. Lots of damage cards.
Who is the artist for that?
I have no idea. I could picture it, but I don't know it.
Yeah, it's like...
I just looked it up. It's someone I'm not at all familiar. Tom Kiffin.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Kiffin.
Spelled K-Y-F-F-I-N.
Yeah. Can't wait to see that.
Has he done any other Magic cards?
yes, but I'm trying to... I don't think there's many other relevant ones, maybe? I'm trying to remember what else he did.
I don't know. The Curian Rangers. Curian Rangers.
Nothing else does a major. He did like a couple of random Visions, Tempest cards. It's funny though. You mentioned Justin Hampton. He's one of those like low key great Magic artists.
Yep.
Like he hasn't done a ton of stuff, but what he has done, I really like. I'm a big fan of the original Winds of Change art.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have that in Legends, and it's one of my favorites.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I wish Winds of Change was a better card.
Well, it's when you compare it to Scroll Rack, it's like, not as good.
Beyond that, I'm sorting my tradables just so I have them handy, but I'm going to have lots of things to throw in for people. Because I've got like, if you like the Tempest Disenchant, or if you like the Masks one, or whatever, I'm pulling all of those. So if you have like an urge for a random art of like, I have three or four different types of counterspell art. So not cards that are big bucks, but they help round out trades, and if people want specific art, I probably have it.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, definitely. Oh, do you have this in whatever?
Like, oh, yeah, in lands, I've got most of... I have to sort those or have the kids sort them for me. But, but yeah, I mean, even that, I've got, like, two huge boxes full of lands from the pre-modern era. So if you're looking for very specific art, feel free to hit me up.
How many different counterspell arts are there?
Oh, my God. Tons.
The original 5th edition Ice Age.
Are we talking about just pre-modern?
Yeah, just pre-modern. All right, this might be a topic for another episode. Individual top five counterspell. Because we did it with the Dark
least,
Ritual.
I wanted to throw in that I got a steal on Tangle Wires, so I now have a play set of Tangle Wires from a crazy eBay, one of those where nobody bid on it.
That's awesome.
And so I basically, they're not English. Uh-huh. It's two Spanish, two Portuguese. So that would drive you crazy, ooh, Jared. Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, they're similar enough, right?
They're pretty close.
Romance languages.
Yeah, it's true.
But yeah, I mean, they're very HP, but still I got them for basically like $3 each.
Go for it, yeah. That card is so awesome. Like, just that card is pure nostalgia for me.
Yeah. Well, after we were talking about it on the episode with Mike Arnold, I was just thinking, like, how do I not own that card? Because it was one of my favorite cards back in the day.
It's so cool.
How have I not built a deck with that card?
It's one of those that, like, it has a symmetry, but you can break the hell out of the symmetry the way you build that deck. You know, or actually, it really isn't
symmetric.
No, it doesn't. The way you stack triggers now, like, it definitely doesn't have it at all.
Well, even back then, you know, it's always they tap four, you tap two.
Right, because you tap
three, you tap one.
Yeah. It's huge. Yeah, you're right. It actually is completely unsymmetric as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll be building some sort of deck that involves Tangle.
And for anybody out there, like, just the counter spells, I've got Ice Age, Tempest, and, like, Mirrodin, Mercadian Mask. So I have at least those. Nice. I know there's 5th edition art. There's the... the arena promo, the original 5th edition,
7th edition.
So there's a ton of different arts. I know I have it for Disenchant and other stuff. It's like, I don't expect people to be like, oh, I need a play set of that, and that's all they want.
What's the quick story on those arena cards? Because it's Incinerate, it's Fireball, Counterspell. And like one of
not Fireball. Disenchant.
There is a Fireball, but I can't remember what sheet it's off of. If you Jeff White just posted a one for sale.
Yeah.
I wish I would have jumped faster. But there is a fireball. I don't own any of the fireballs. I've got disenchants, two counters, two incinerates, and several disenchants, including a couple like Judge Foil versions of that. That's my favorite art for
and
disenchant.
And then the basics.
It's like a dude blowing up a millstone.
What do they give those out for?
I think it was the first arena leagues.
A 10-day or something? Okay, I mean, that would make sense, you know. I just wasn't sure.
Yeah, so like the top third had those cards, and then the bottom two-thirds were the five basic land arena arts, including like the Loch Ness Monster Island.
Yeah, Arena League 1996.
Yep. Okay, that makes sense. Okay. Nice. Before we move on, I just
close the gap between casual and professional play, offering a possibility to play competitively in public without the pressure of participation requirements or ranking issues.
Nice. I mean, this is probably their first attempt at FNM, like, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. So before we move on, but I just wanted to mention that my monthly this month, I had a murderer's row group of death this month. So it was me. Mm-hmm. It was Flint. It was Patrick Burt. It was Ron Taylor. It was David Daniel. It was
Mike Van Dyke, right?
I'm going to forget some of them. Mike Van Dyke, who's an old school, very good player, who just is dipping his toe into pre-modern. Well, there was two others that I'm blanking. This new guy, Graham. I'm sorry, man. You joined I think he definitely held the zone. And then there's one other I'm forgetting. I don't know if you have it up in front of you, but Aaron Dix, you know, who made top four of the Midsummer Revel, actually, you know, last year. So like all good players playing good decks. And I was going to try out like the elves lips that our friend the Turtle Man sent me. He just, you know, mails me for Gaia's Cradles, you know, why not?
Yeah.
And then but anyway, and I was like, maybe this isn't the group to kind of try something out in, you know.
Yeah. I need to go with something, some old standby.
And I went with my old standby of the Red Deck Wins Sly, and I just, you know, it's one of those decks that I like to kind of polish off like once every, you know, six months to a year, and that was fun.
You don't want to go too long without playing it.
But like I had fun playing. I still have fun playing it. You know, it's just like the games are quick, and I think I had a 3-game set against Flint that was over. I think it was a total of like 10 turns, and it was over in like 20 minutes. You know, it was very fast. So it was fun though. It was definitely a murderer's row, and I think you know, I didn't win the group. I went 4-2, 10-5, and which is definitely good for that group. So I was pretty happy. Yeah, so anyway, I just wanted to mention that, and those are all good guys, good sports, so I had a lot of fun with them. And
nice.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
I love when you see those groups, nice, even then something like that, it's like, ooh.
No, but I mean, but like, this is, so, I mean, this is one of those things, it's like, you want the, like, you know, a bunch of good players playing the same thing, then everyone's on the same level, you know, you all know what you're going for.
Well, that's what I was going to say, like, you look at it and you're kind of like, oh, damn, I'm against a bunch of good players, but at the same time, you know, when I see a list of players and I don't know them, then I'm more worried, because then I'm like, I don't know how good these guys are.
Yeah. Right. Or it's like, I'd rather see that, like a really competitive group like that, than like you see a group where it's like, you know, it's like six people that are like, you know, maybe new or, you know, maybe not that competitive. Or and then like the top two are just like, okay.
It's, and it's not a bad thing if guys, you get, you know, beat in like a group like that. I was always told as a kid playing sports or anything else, it's like having competition against people better than you makes you better. Because you're learning stuff while you're doing it. So
yeah, 100%.
Getting smacked around is not a bad thing.
No, you'll definitely learn something. So
someone told me that maybe the first month that I started playing Magic competitively, because, you know, you lose so much when you're a little kid and you're going to the tournaments and you're playing against guys who are way better.
Is this the same guy who made fun of you for drafting Multani? Or whatever.
Probably, yeah. It probably was the same foil guy, because I actually became friends with that guy.
Yeah.
I became close friends with that guy. He used to come over to my house. But it might have been him, yeah. And he was like, well, dude, if you're always winning, you're not going to get any better. Like, you have to play against people who are better than you.
Right. Yeah, no, definitely. Especially when, you know, there's as many people to play in the world, you know, for this game, so... There's always going to be someone better than you until you're literally at the top, you know. Mm-hmm. And even then,
you're still going to lose.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. Anyway, cool.
So that was a good little roundup of our announcements and pickups and brews.
Absolutely.
Shall we get to our deck tech?
Absolutely.
Our counters, burns, and broken things.
Absolutely. Let's move to it.
I have a tender spot in my heart.
Counters, burns,
and broken things.
So, what would you put this in? Is this, I guess this is counters and burns.
Counters and burns, and yeah, this is that wonderful middle ground of that we like to call tempo, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So, we're going to be talking about what is collectively called in the pre-modern community, the solution.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, it was called Team America or Captain America. I guess if you play modern Magic, it's Jeskai.
Yeah. It is the Lightning Angel deck, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the key card that kind of tied all of these colors together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've been seeing kind of a lot of people talking about it, which is why we're talking about it now. Just in the past, I don't know, 5 or 6 days, I think I've seen 3 or 4 people post their version of the deck.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see this kind of pop up, because it's one of those decks that like any kind of Legacy player would probably want to port over. It's like, well, there's a lot of good cards in these colors, and it's like, you know, just finding the way to win the game or what kind of creatures you want to use for it, you know, because I think it's the classic example of these, the maximum kind of, this deck is like the classic like blue red Delver deck, you know. It's definitely like an efficient beater or two, counters, like quick burns, little draw engine. You know, it's got a lot of like just individually good cards that kind of have some synergy together, but it's mostly just, you know, individual card quality that like wins the games with this. And this is kind of the same kind of thing. It's doing it that way.
Yeah. You've got your low to the ground, powerful spells and Swords to Plowshares, Lightning Bolt, a couple counters, some cantrips, that sort of thing. But then you also have efficient creatures, namely Lightning Angel, as we said.
Right.
And then Meddling Mage, which is a format all-star.
Format all-star, yeah. It's one of those that if you know the format well, like it can single-handedly win you the game. And absolutely. You know, we've seen it in other decks, like the probably that blue-white-white weenie deck. We see it in blue-white and blue-white-black versions of Stifle Knot, you know, and it pops up here and there. And it's just one of those that, like, if you know the format, like, you're just going to win games because you know the right cards to say. And I've cast a plenty of good amount of melee mages in my time, and just sometimes you're just like, oh, man, like,
what do I name here?
You know, it's like, okay, so he wins with Devourer, Alter of Dementia, and Tinker. Okay, he's got this mana right now. Do I say the Tinker because you can always get that, or it takes more? Like, you got to do some like calculation of like the odds of what they have in their hand. You know, assuming you don't have perfect information from like a duress or something like that. You know, or like
right,
a peak.
Exactly.
So like, it's really interesting to like kind of play with it, and I really like the card, and it's so, and Chris Pecula, you know, on it and everything, just so iconic. Yeah.
And it kind of makes me wonder if this deck. I mean, we were going to do the history first, but let's just talk about pre-modern right now.
Yeah.
Do you think that this deck would be better with Peak in it for the Meddling Mages?
I think our friend Remy suggested he started playing Portent instead of the AKs.
Yeah,
like,
most people were running AK.
AK's a fine card.
Not as popular anymore.
Yeah, well, I mean, because how are you cheating them into the yard, right? The first one sucks, right? It's the second.
The best way to play an AK deck is to play either Intuition
right,
or something that's going to get a bunch of them in the yard, well, like Oath.
Well, this deck also, right, Oath is definitely a good way to do it.
Or if you're planning on playing a very long game.
Right.
You know, like a Psychotog deck.
Right. Fact of Fiction, you know, finds ways to put AK in the yard, you know, but it's just, yeah, I don't think you're totally taking advantage of it. So I think Portent is just like, to be able to like dig three is huge compared to like, and get the card choice, even though you don't get the card right away. Yeah. Peaks an instant, helps with Meddling Mage.
Well, and that's the main reason I want to ask, because we're kind of talking about Meddling Mage here. There have been so many times when I've played Meddling Mage, and even though you know the right card to name, you know what deck you're playing against, right? Say you're a handful of turns in, and they're one of those decks where it's like, okay, 9 times out of 10, I name this card.
Right.
But then you're in a situation where you're like, I don't think I named that card here.
Right.
And that's happened to me like way more times than you would think. Like, maybe it's not 9 times out of 10, but like, just an example off the top of my head, this isn't that situation, but like, I was playing against the Reanimator deck, and it's like, do you name Reanimate or do you name Exhume?
Right.
Like, most of the time you name Reanimate because that's one mana less, and Exhume has the potential for you to get something back. But then also, it's kind of like, maybe I want them to lose the life from a Reanimate.
True.
You know?
That is a good hard call to make, yeah.
Yeah, or maybe, you know, I actually want to name Animate Dead here for whatever reason. And then, like, there are plenty of other situations, too. Like say you're playing against Devourer, where they haven't cast the Altar of Dementia yet. So, and they're probably going to cheat the Devourer into play with Tinker. So it's like, do you name Tinker? Do you name Fling?
Right.
Do you name Altar of Dementia? Like, what do you do then?
Yeah, that's why I brought up that option. Yeah,
Peak isn't worth it.
Yeah, I think it could be, you know. I think it's just like, but this is such a deck that, like, you know, it's less about the synergy and more about the individual card power that, like, I think, you know, it's, if you don't have the Meddling Mage, then you're not you know, benefiting as much from it. Even though having information of what your opponent's doing is great, especially if you have counter spells, you know, so you know what to counter and what you can handle with like your other removal. But at the same time, I think like the digging three, the, you know, the options you have, you have a couple fetch lands so you can cycle, you know, fetch away some of those extra cards or whatever. So getting that kind of card selection going, I think it's pretty important with a card like Porton or like, you know, the card raw card draw of like what AK could be, you know, later in the game. So,
yeah, that's a good point. And something Remy actually said when he posted his deck list is that Portent has been really good because you can also check out your opponent's top three.
Yeah,
and
it could.
Then name Meddling Mage based on that.
Could do that. I mean, that's not nothing. You know like that's probably mid game. Yeah, that's a mid game strategy for sure.
Yeah, but like that can be really good. Yeah.
So the rest of this deck, we kind of been just talking about some of the big cards here, but it's got a couple.
Sorry for my peak tangent.
Yeah, no, totally fine. But like, you know, you get a couple Exalted Angel as kind of your top end, like kind of beaters, along with the Lightning Angels, a couple Moms that protect the creatures. You know, Mom's just a pretty good card that's kind of underplayed.
Mom's just all around really good.
A couple of Disenchants, three Factor Fictions. I mean, it's a great Factor Fiction kind of deck. You know, you're going to hold up and then end of the turn, Foff. Fire and Ice, just what a useful card, you know. Replaces itself two for ones with the fire part of it, like awesome. And what I also like is that this is a deck that it uses Lightning Bolt. You know, like I said before, like such a good card. Yeah, just like such a good card because you are the tempo. So you're like that can clear the way, kill some like a combo like you know a creature combo piece of theirs, or goes to the face and wins the game. You know, like just the options that has is awesome.
Yeah, and it's funny because like we've talked on the pod before about how Lightning Bolt is not as ubiquitous as people think. No. Like it's not like old school,
right? No,
where pretty much everyone's packing a Lightning Bolt.
Or I'd say it's in like 60% of decks or something like that, right?
Yeah. It feels like it. But you know, this is, and I think the main reason for that is that red is such. It's one of the weaker splash colors in this format.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're going to splash, you're probably going to splash for either black for duress or white for swords or something like that.
Yeah.
Light
and Tutor.
Splash. Yeah. Enlightened Tutor. Oh, there's just not that much in red that you would splash for. But like this being a tempo deck that runs red, like Lightning Bolt is perfect.
Yeah. You literally would want it for. I mean, yeah, just Lightning Bolt and Fire and Ice is probably the next splashed red card, right? Like, I can't even think of, like, another, like, splashable red card. Pyroclasm. Pyroclasm gets splashed.
Pyroclasm in the board. Yeah, but Lightning Bolt and Fire
and Pyro, Ice. Pyroblast, Red Elemental Blast, that kind of stuff, you know.
And the thing is, like, Burn is still very good.
Yes.
You know, this is a creature format.
Yeah, Lightning Bolt is still an A-plus card, you know what I mean? Like, it's a very good card. So,
100%.
But also, like you, because it's less ubiquitous, you see some creatures getting played that don't pass the Lightning Bolt test that are kind of like, okay. You know what I mean? Like Hypnotic Spectre gets played, you know, a decent amount in this format. Whereas it's like you can kind of risk the Ritual Spectre or whatever in these like kind of aggressive red black decks against like you know most places. Because I mean, outside of it's either swords for the most part, it's like swords and. You know, Bolt are going to make you pay, and not every deck has it because the deck diversity, obviously, as we've said many times, is so huge.
Right. So. Exactly. And there's so many decks that run, you know, like Mana Dorks. There's just so many uses for
plenty of Birds of Paradises, Hermit Druids, Goblin Lackeys, you know, Moms on turn one. Like, they all need to just be dead, you know?
Yeah. I think the main reason it's not played is. Just because it's not that easy to splash with the mana bases that we're running. And like I said, like red is one of the least splash colors.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, but
you know what does pass the Lightning Bolt test?
Lightning Angel.
A Lightning Angel.
That's true. It's true. Very much so. I mean, what do you think about Lightning Angel? I mean, four mana is a lot, and it has a lot of good text on it. Don't get me wrong, but like four mana can be a lot sometimes, especially if you want to be countering and holding things up, you know?
It is, but I just love a card like that. Mm-hmm. It's one of those cards that I just gravitate towards. I love when you combine a bunch of abilities onto a creature to make it a very powerful creature.
And it's three abilities that all represent the color that it's being cast by.
It's so flavorful.
Yeah, so flavorful, right?
And even down to, I mean, this is obviously not gameplay, but even down to the RK post art.
Yeah.
I love Lightning Angel so much. You know what? I think I got to pick up a playset.
Well, it was one of those, when it was printed, it was like, oh, like this, look at this card. Like, you know, look at all this.
Totally.
It flies, it attacks, it has haste, and it has vigilance. You know, or it doesn't attack to a tap, and it's unaffected by summoning sickness. Yeah, I know.
It hits the ground running.
And yep. So, like, that is one of the good things about it is that it provides offense and defense right away, you know, right. Which is good.
You're right. 4 mana is a lot, but...
I mean, nowadays, this card is definitely 3 mana, right? Like, it's just...
Mantis Rider.
Yeah, exactly.
They reprinted it where the only difference is that it's a 3-3 instead of a 3-4. But... that means it doesn't pass the lightning bolt test.
time out. Is it exactly the same? It attacks, vigilance, and flying?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay.
They printed it as exactly the same, but it doesn't have that colorless, and it is a 3-3.
I mean, still good card.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
But does not pass the lightning bolt test, like you said. But at the same at the same time, I think you'd take a 3-mana 3-3 in this case for that card. You know, in this format. But, that's interesting. I think that what's holding it back from being played more is that the color fixing in three colors, especially the shards as opposed to the wedges or whatever, is so much worse in pre-modern than it is in like most modern days. You know, looking at this mana base, it's kind of all over the place. Like it's kind of what it needs to be, right? It's got 4 islands, 4 flooded strands, a couple planes. Or 3 plains, 3 mountains. So, like, that's kind of the basics. And then 2 reflecting pools, 2 gemstone mines, 2 city of brasses, then 1 of each of the on-color kind of painlands, Adakar Waste, Battlefield Forge, and Shivan Reef, which is kind of like what you got to do. That's kind of the best you can do. It's kind of the deck you wish you could play 4 reflecting pools, but, you know, it's kind of hard to – you don't want those to be your only, you know, because you have to play so many basics too, so it's kind of hard to. Otherwise, you're taking a lot of damage.
Well, and it's funny. Some of the earlier versions of the deck, like I'm on TC decks, and some of these just do not look like they would work at all. Like, people are playing way too many basics. I mean, I get it. You have the flooded strand, but like I'm on one deck here that's like 6 island, 3 mountain, 2 plains, 4 flooded strand. Mm-hmm. 2 Shivan Reef, 1 Adakar Waste, 1 Battlefield Forge, 1 Coastal Tower, 3 Grand Coliseum as your only.
Oh my god!
5 color, like you got to run more 5 color than that.
Yeah,
it sounds like if you got all these 1 of painlands, they might be like an EDH player or something. why would they ever need 4?
But the one you were just reading up, I'm guessing that's Remy's most recent.
Yes, that was. Yeah.
Yeah. That definitely sounds a lot better. Like, I would for sure run some cities. I would for sure run some gemstone mines.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? I'm looking at this list. I would run this deck. This deck seems kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a nice deck.
I gotta find some. You're right. I think I gotta kind of scroll through these more and kind of pick some. I gotta figure out the mana base, but I think like it's doing a lot of cool things. You know, like there's just playing like Lightning Angel. I get there's just gotta be some like real positive, you know, kind of feelings when you play that card.
And I'm kind of looking at it, just thinking like, all right, so I got to get a playset of Lightning Angels and I got to get some Reflecting Pools. I could build this deck.
Those can't be that expensive, right? The Lightning Angels?
No, they're probably cheap. Like I picked 50 cent rare.
Yeah. Because and for the record, like, so looking at some of these mana bases that are playing like Grand Coliseum and, whatchamacallit, and, and like Coastal Tower or whatever, like you can't have any kind of any of these come into play tap lands. That's just that can't be right.
No, I would never play it comes into play tap land when your deck is mostly one mana spells.
One mana spells, like cheap interaction. Like you don't want to play like, yeah, no, I don't think you can do that. Yeah.
You don't want to miss an opportunity that you might not get again.
Yeah, I agree.
I do wonder if Undiscovered might actually be better than Gemstone.
Well, man, you gotta get up to four mana though. You know,
that's true. You got the Lightning Angels, the Exalted. You got the Voffs, yeah. You got the Exalted. All right, yeah, I take that back.
Yeah,
you probably play one or two of the Lair Lands. Maybe
I was gonna say maybe Lair Lands would be good. I mean, it sucks that there are no wedge.
If there was a wedge layer, I would play it. But like otherwise, I think you would just play more of the Pain Lands. You know.
God, what I wouldn't give for wedge layers in pre-modern.
It's so nice, though, to just be like, bounce my gemstone with one counter on it for this lair, replay the gemstone.
Mm-hmm. In my recent TCG orders, I actually just threw on random lair lands because I was like, you know what? Sometimes I'm building and I wish I had more Croesus's Catacombs.
Well, no, I actually just bought a bunch of Croesus's Catacombs too. That's kind of funny. Like probably like 2 months ago. But like, because
I got those. I got the Dromars. Filled out.
But it's like, I wouldn't probably go over, I don't know what's the safe number in a deck.
Two. Tops. Two max.
Two of any mix, right?
But like, they're very useful in replenishing your gemstone mines and also bouncing back City of Traders.
Yep. Yeah, like if you're playing like a five color deck, like if you're playing like Slivers or five color Zoo, like a low to the ground five color deck, you could run two, three, maybe even four. Yeah. No, not four, three.
I know.
It's like, but
you run four gemstones in those decks.
What other lands are benefiting from getting bounced back with layer lands? Is there anything else? I mean, obviously, like you said, gemstone and City of Traders.
Undiscovered, gemstone. It mitigates the negative side effect of Undiscovered,
which you get anyway from the layer land, you know. That's so you're breaking even there.
Depends on the deck build. I mean, if you have like explorations, it might be beneficial, but yeah, otherwise it's just getting it back to your hand sooner.
Could help with
but
land,
you know,
tax.
If you're playing a shard, like there's nothing wrong with throwing in two of your
even if you're playing
color layers
in the right kind of deck too. Like if you're just playing like if you're playing blue and red, like in that like kind of blue red tinker deck that I played a couple little bit ago, it was awesome in that. Like it was like here's red and blue, you know.
Yeah,
like, here's some.
I think I saw somebody use it to bounce a Glacial Chasm.
Okay,
ooh, that's very cool.
Yeah, I might have it on tape. It might be on. I can't remember where I saw it, but it was like, that was a great way to reset the cumulative life part.
That is a really cool corner.
Yeah, that feels like something Flint Espel's done.
I was thinking the same
thing. It could
thing.
Be Flint.
I was gonna say, was it Flint?
Yeah,
It might. It actually probably was.
Yeah,
it was probably his lands. Somebody playing lands.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely a lands move. But like,
yeah, for sure.
Should Dead Guy Ale be playing? Like a couple of like Dromar's Cavern.
Dromar's Cavern.
Because another way to cast both black and white.
I would consider it for sure.
I mean, I don't think that they're not. Then you could play Gemstone Mine as well, and kind of get some benefit from it. Like play like true Dromar's Caverns, play a couple Gemstone Mines, and now you have like a couple more ways to cast black and white. Because like those planes in that deck, when you're trying to play like Nantucoche, like that, like that just looks awful, right? You know, playing planes in
your Nantucoche deck. Like if you're playing Tainted Fields, you're like, I had that happen to somebody I played. They were like, I'm going to keep this. And then they looked again and said, can I take that back? I failed to realize I had a tainted that requires a swamp.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I don't care, colorless. Dude. You're like, whatever.
Well, I mean, those tainted cards are actually okay. But like, you're right. The requirements of swamps, like you need like 7 to 8 swamps, like pure swamps.
Exactly. You basically need to be heavy black.
Yeah, right.
Like,
with a
splash brewing the decks color, recently. Not like, you don't want the deck to be 50-50.
And a lot of those like dead guy lists are like are getting more white, whereas like the white cards you want to play are Vindicate, Gerard's Verdict, and it's like, well, why not Swords? Why not Disenchant? Yeah. Like, it kind of like, it changes. But anyway, sorry, little tangent there, but yeah.
Yeah. So we haven't even gone through the history yet.
Yeah.
So let's
where does this name come from?
Tell us, good sage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What is the story?
So, blue, white, red tempo has kind of been a strategy for quite a while. I mean, if you play old school, you know that like people play
Lions, Dibs, and Bolts. Yeah.
Yeah. Lions, Dibs, Bolts. Like it's a common strategy. And, for, you know, most of like 95, 96, 97, like you had that. Mm-hmm. And then people would play it mostly as a white weenie deck, splashing blue and red, because you've got the whole Tithe with dual lands thing before fetches mm-hmm. came about, which actually was one of my favorite extended decks that I ever built was white weenie splashing blue and red, you know, when Tundras and Plateaus were $10 each. And so that's kind of how it went about until Invasion.
Mm-hmm.
Invasion block, obviously, we all know it's the multicolored block. And what kind of happened, the story of Invasion block, is that there was a Pro Tour Tokyo in 2001, and it was the first major Invasion block tournament. And everyone and their mother brought green-red to this tournament because everyone fires. Thought, you know, yeah. Well, interestingly enough, it wasn't playing fires.
Oh.
It was, yeah. It
Ancient
was
Hydra?
Just your standard green-red beatdown deck. It was running Blurred Mongoose, Kavu Titan, Raging Kavu, Skizik, Thornscape Familiar, Thornscape Battle Mage, okay. Urza's Rage, Gitu Fire. So, you know, it was just your standard green-red beatdown, but everyone kind of thought at the time that, like, nothing could handle that kind of onslaught, you know?
Right.
Invasion was very much a, what's the word? It was kind of the return to creatures being good.
Yeah.
Or the start of creatures being good. And so there were all these low to the ground, powerful green and red creatures. However, the winner of that tournament was Zivi Mauschwitz with the solution, as he called it. And it was called the solution because it solved the problem of how do you beat all of these green red beatdown decks. You load your deck up with protection from red creatures.
Right.
So at the time, this was before Apocalypse had come out, and he was running Crimson Acolytes, Galena's Knight, Meddling Mage, Stormscape Apprentice, and Voice of All. So fully three out of five of them had or could have protection from red. And then you have the Crimson Acolyte that can grant protection from red to your other creatures. Then you play things like Absorb, Exclude, Factor Fiction, Repulse. So that's kind of your tempo, your counter magic, your draw spells. Obviously, once Apocalypse came out, the whole paradigm shifted. And then people were playing enemy colors, and that's when Lightning Bolt debuted.
Lightning Angel. Yeah.
God damn it. Yeah. I was going so well.
Yeah. But this also had Prophetic Bolt in it, and the Rack Evolver was a pretty good creature. I think when you kicked both sides of the Rack Evolver, it became like a 5/5 flying with lifelink and something else, I think.
Yeah, it was really good. And then also Goblin Legionnaire.
Yeah, oh yeah, forgot about
which
that guy.
I wish that was a better card. You know, I wish that was played more.
2/2 for red and a white. That for a red, you can sack it to shock, and then or light healing self, basically. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it was a cool concept. I really like the Apocalypse Knights.
Yeah,
they were good. But yeah, so it ran all those things and. But you also, that was the introduction of the enemy colored painlands,
right,
which didn't exist. So even in Invasion block, you could run, you know, 4 Shivanry, 4 Battlefield Forge, 4 Coastal Tower, and then Fire Ice, you know, all that other good stuff. And I think that's when they started calling it Team America.
That sounds right. Team America. I think it was Team America.
Yeah, but it seems as though colloquially in pre-modern we call it the solution, which is kind of funny considering the solution was specifically the Zivi Mauschwitz mm-hmm. blue-white deck. But hey, if the name fits.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's just I would call this the Lightning Angel deck, so to speak. Like it is the red, white, and blue Team America, whatever you want to call it. But I think it's kind of cool. Like I mean. I think I would give it a spin for sure. It seems interesting.
Yeah, seems like a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Doesn't seem all that expensive. You know, I think Meddling Mages are still low. Mm-hmm. Lightning Angel's definitely low. Mm-hmm. Painlands, they've been going up, but not too much.
Yeah, I think City Rests are a couple bucks. I don't know. Or actually, I think they're in their teens or something like that. I don't know.
City of Brass has been, unfortunately, going up for a while.
Yeah. Interestingly. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, cool deck. I think it's a fun one. I think we'll I'd like to see more of it. See, this is the thing. One of those, like when we compare it to like modern day kind of like what tempo decks are, you know, the creatures are a little bit higher up on the curve, right? With the Lightning Angel being four, as opposed to like a Delver being one or a Young Pyromancer being two, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. But at the same time, like the kind of the theory is the same. It's just a lot of good low impact spells low cost, high impact spells that, you know, and a little bit of counter magic, removal, burn, you know, card selection. It's a recipe for success for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what's cool about it is this was kind of the first one of that variety. And if you've played any recent modern Magic, like, you know that the Jeskai colors, as they're called now, are basically considered the tempo colors.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and it's like this was kind of the first iteration of that concept.
Yeah. Because, I mean, the tempo in you know, we could go into a big thing about what tempo is in Magic, you know, in different situations. But, like, the tempo deck is something that applies a little pressure and can, like, kind of – and then disrupt the opponent at the same time. Whereas an aggro deck is more all in on the pressure part. And a control deck is obviously on the other side of the spectrum, which is, like, kind of hold them back. So it's trying to place both sides, which is definitely a fun way to play Magic, though. But it's a very important to understand the old Mike Flores concept of who's the beatdown, and knowing which you are is so important to those kind of decks. And just knowing where you are in the game and when to turn the corner is to apply or to hold back or whatever is essential to success with this deck.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
But again, your card quality is so high that, like, you know, it's probably, you know, going to help you out quite a bit, you know, to kind of fight you through some tough situations.
Yeah, it's one of those decks where it's got answers to anything. So maybe we should be calling it the solution.
Actually, that's probably the best kind of like argument I've heard, is that it has answers to everything. Thus, it is the solution.
Yeah, so. Exactly. You've got your counter magic. Mm. I've seen a lot of stifles in these lists.
Yeah.
You've got your lightning bolts. You got your swords. You got your disenchants. Like you have a way to deal with most any threat.
Yeah. And this is, and like I said, and Remy put up a nice third place finish in the November monthly with this one. So that's we're getting like close to 100 people in each of these tournaments. Like that's a good finish no matter what.
Yeah. If you could pull that off, like that's pretty great.
I think we had 112 this month.
Yeah. 112. That's a good run.
And there were three that I couldn't fit in because every pod was 8 people already.
Yeah. That's just, gets kind of awkward. Yeah. So, it just means more pods, but yeah, I mean, it's a cool deck.
Very, yeah, very cool.
Definitely give it a look.
So shall we do our little judges corner?
Yeah, we haven't done one of these in a long time, so I think this will be fun.
The DNA is a perfect match for Judge Joseph Dredd.
It's a lie! The evidence has been falsified! It's impossible! I never broke the law! I am the law! Sounds
good. So I tried to slide in that mention of stifle because that's what we're going to be talking about in this judge's corner. It's a little bit different from our usual. Instead of talking about a particular scenario, we're going to be talking about the many scenarios that come up around one card, stifle.
I mean, we all know the classic use of it to either, you know, stifle the trigger on a dreadnought, or, you know, to kill a fetch land. Yep. Those are pretty straightforward.
Those were one of the first things I experienced when I came back after a decade off. And I'm like, oh, watching a fetch land just go and get you nothing.
You know, actually, speaking of, like, this is, like, why did this, the solution deck could definitely play some stifles. Like,
I've seen it in a couple of lists.
I mean, that's not bad. Like, there's a lot of things to stifle, as we're about to get into, but, like, stifling, you know, one of
the... Well, here's the thing, though. Stifle on a Fetchland in this format is not the same as Stifle on a Fetchland in Legacy.
How so?
You know,
because they're playing less.
There's a reason that Stifle is a 4 of in Rug Delver in Legacy, and in, you know, the Lightning Angel deck, the solution, as we just talked about, it's maybe a 1 or 2 of. And that's because, like, in Legacy, everyone's mana base revolves around their fetch lands.
Fair.
You know, like six, it's eight. Not just the stone rain, it's preventing them from fixing whatever they're planning on doing.
Okay, that's fair.
Whereas in this format, a fetch land is really just, it's just getting you a basic, and you probably have another one in your hand. Not another fetch land, but a basic of what you're looking for.
That's true. Okay.
But at the same time, that does not mean that Stifle is not a good card.
No, it's pretty cool.
In fact, it's very good, and I am definitely a proponent of running, you know, one or two, even if your deck is not a Stifle not deck and doesn't revolve around it. It's still nice if you're a control deck to have the ability not just to stop spells, but sometimes you lose the game to a trigger.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about this. So, like, things that can be stifled. Anything that has, like, a tap in its activation. Anything that has an activation cost, right?
Yeah, if it's got a colon.
Absolutely.
That's
okay,
that's,
if it has a colon, a cost, effect, you know, a tap, a sack, then this, you know, those are... Okay, so...
Those are activated abilities.
Those are activated abilities. I think we all know.
That has a cost to... Do.
So, like, you could do a cop red activation. It wouldn't be very good, but like, because it could just tap another one. But yeah, okay. So, and you can also stifle a Tormod Script, for example. All right, so
that's much more useful,
right?
You do it to a
So this is where one of the things that gets complicated is the triggered abilities, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, so this is where we need to get into. So the reason why you can do, you could stifle the Dreadnought trigger. It's because it says what when it comes into play, or how is that worded?
Key word you are looking for is when.
Yeah, whenever, or at if are the keywords that all associate with the trigger, like at the beginning, right. Or when X happens, or.
Could you repeat that again, Andrew?
Yeah.
What are the words?
The trigger's abilities will start with when, whenever, or at. So, like, when X happens, do something, or at the beginning of, or whenever someone discards, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, you can stifle an Oath trigger.
Yep.
I mean...
Because that says what?
Do it the next turn, but because that says at the beginning of upkeep, you can stifle, you know, a Black Vice trigger. Mm-hmm. You can stifle all sorts of things.
Okay.
You can't stifle.
And the keyword, though, right? Is not involved in that is as.
I was just about to say, because this is where this came up, is because Suture Ghoul is probably one of the cards that this most applies to, because Suture Ghoul says, as Suture Ghoul enters the battlefield, exile any number of creature cards from your graveyard and gets power and toughness equal to the sacrifice, you know, whatever.
Correct.
So the word as, so that's not triggered. So when... So basically, so when Suture Ghoul comes into play, it already is what it is, right? That ability is already completely resolved, right?
Well, it's more of that it doesn't use the stack to do it. It's like Suture Ghoul comes into play, and as part it's almost like they were trying
part
to
of
say
its resolution.
Like, as part of the cost.
Yeah.
But it's not quite the same thing.
Right. No, it isn't.
So that's kind of the closest they could approximate to that. Because, I mean, the main reason for it is not because Stifle wasn't printed yet, right?
Right.
Suture Ghoul came out earlier. The main reason was so that you would have to do something for it. Like, there's no way that you can, like, skip that.
Right. So, because also, if Suture Ghoul says when it comes into play, it would just be a 0/0 and it just die to itself to state-based effects, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
So, Okay.
They would have had to make it an O1 to live.
Right. They'd have to have made it an O1 to begin with.
Then when it says when, whenever, or at. Okay.
Right.
All right. So
you cannot stifle a suture goal. Don't even try.
Okay. Because I think I did do that. I think even during like the PSS or something like that. Or,
you know, shame! But,
you know what I think it was? I think I mentioned it to you when I was playing against you because you were playing Angry Ghoul and I was playing Stifle Knot.
And I was like, why didn't you just stifle the trigger? And like that's what I was playing around it. That's what it was. I was playing around you having stifled to prevent my suture ghoul from working. And you're like, yeah, it doesn't work, man.
Oh, okay.
You're like, yeah, it doesn't work, man. I was like, oh, so I could have won like, you know, turns before.
So maybe that's why I won.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think that's exactly what it was.
Wonder fact, there's also anyway. The state, what is it? Not state based. Turn-based actions or special things like your normal draw, your doing combat damage, or if you have a morph, which is probably one of the most key ones, if you pay to flip a morph, that doesn't use a stack. So it doesn't use a stack.
Yep. You cannot stifle someone flipping up their Exalted Angel.
That does not use the stack?
It does not use the stack.
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
Because they wanted to make such it a weird, confusing. It's,
well, it's so crazy because it also makes it so that if something has one of those when you turn whatever face up abilities, it's basically uncounterable.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing you could do to stop it.
Shame. Shame. Shame.
Whoops. Sorry, guys. Mike here. I realized after we recorded that I'm totally wrong about this. A morph creature's ability that reads, when this creature is turned face up, is most definitely a triggered ability that uses the stack and can be countered by Stifle. It's a separate action from the morph ability, which does not use the stack. So, my bad. Carry on, gents.
You may morph. I guess I gotta know what morph actually does, but that's a whole nother probably judge's corner. Mm-hmm. All right. So what are you can't stifle morphs. What about what are some of the other like good things you can't like stifle?
Just to give you the actual wording on a morph.
Okay.
You may cast this card face down as a 2/2 creature for 3 colorless mana. Turn it face up at any time for its morph cost.
Yep.
You know, so it never says like.
Do you need priority to flip a morph?
Yeah, you would always have to have priority.
Yes,
to do
you do
something.
Need priority. Okay.
What about okay, so when you put
but
a morph,
that's also cool because certain morph creatures like with their you know turning them face up abilities,
and Tuco Disciple,
like the one that counters, and then there's one that misdirects.
Yeah,
like. They're basically uncountable.
I think what Nantuko Disciple is like flip it up for a naturalize.
Vigilante. Nantuko Vigilante, I think.
Oh,
it is.
Vigilante. That's
Vigilante.
It is.
Yeah. And then there's like Willbender, mm-hmm. which is a misdirection.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. What about
cool thing.
So when a morph is on the stack, is it cost 3 when you morph it?
When you're casting actually casting the morph, yes.
And it counts. And it counts. As a, and it counts as a creature when it's on the stack too.
Yeah. Okay. Because you can counter a morph.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just the flipping it face up that doesn't actually use the stack.
And you're supposed to always flip over morphs, you know, when done with the turn or when done with the game or whatever, right? Just to prove that you had it. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
To show that it wasn't just.
All right. So okay. So you can't do Suture Ghoul. You can't stifle morphs. What are the other things that you cannot stifle?
Well, so. I don't know, this isn't you cannot, but this is a cool little workaround that also came up in a match between you and I, Jared.
Oh, God.
Goblin Pile Driver.
Yep.
Goblin Pile Driver has protection from blue. Mm. However, Stifle does not target the creature.
It targets the
stifle
ability.
Stifle targets the ability. So you can stifle someone's Goblin Pile Driver ability.
Mm-hmm. That is a good one. That is neat.
It can save you a good 10 damage
at least
for blue. Yeah, that's a really good fog.
Yeah, that's very good fog. Yeah, that's not bad at all. What about I'm trying to think of some other things that like might be common.
Another example is delayed triggers. Like you had an example from Gatherers. Just if you cycle a card, you may exile a creature. If you do, return that creature to the battlefield at the beginning of end step. So when it comes back, there's a trigger for it coming back that's delayed. It's not something happening right now, but at the time it comes onto the stack, you can stifle it then. That doesn't seem too shocking.
Because it's at the end step.
Yeah.
Those are all things that are triggered abilities that you can stifle.
If it goes on the
stack,
that's the main thing you have to know. If you know when things go on the stack, which is, like I said, it's always a good thing to be up. Like, if you play Magic Online, you probably know a lot. You're used to seeing triggers, so that's definitely the benefit of that program.
Okay, how about this one? Yeah. Can you stifle something phasing back in or phasing out?
Phasing is another one of the weird ones because it happens at the beginning of untap. It's like
I actually know this one, and you cannot, because phasing is a keyword ability.
Oh yeah, and it doesn't
trigger or activated ability.
It doesn't even happen.
So it's kind of like you can't stifle first strike. Mm. You know,
and
you can't stifle trample.
And because they've made basically that, like, the before untaps phase for phasing, no one has priority, so there's never a chance that
you can't cast
do anything
spells
at that
then.
Point anyways.
Okay, and it doesn't trigger keyword ability there. That's so what are the other kind of abilities? So there's activated, triggered, keyword. Is there any other kind of abilities, or those are the three like kind of macro kind of versions of abilities?
I think that covers most of them. There's probably something weird out there, but
is the 1 point of damage from City of Brass, if you tap it for mana, is it associated with mana?
So because that one is...
That's part of the resolution, I think.
Because that was printed so long ago, I believe that's in kind of like how, you know, in pre-modern era, lifelink is a triggered ability, which can be stifled. You know, you can stifle the Exalted Angel.
Right, because it says whenever Exalted Angel deals damage, you gain that much life.
Right. So I'm pretty sure you can stifle a City of Brass.
But you can't stifle the mana ability.
Mm-hmm.
No, you can't prevent someone from getting the mana, but you can.
Is it considered a mana ability? So is that a fourth kind of ability?
Why would you ever do?
Right. Well, unless you have to stifle it yourself, you know, somehow.
But then it's like, why?
But say,
you use the mana to cast the
But maybe you needed the black from the City of Brass, and you had an island to use, so, and you're at one life.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess that could happen.
You know, I could see that happening. Okay, so the one damage is a... Is it a... It's activated from the mana ability? Because it uses the stack itself,
so,
right?
City of Brass is...
Weird. Yes, we know
that. Because it's so old. And actually, this came up, I think, in the PSS, where I didn't realize that I was at one life, and I could have used my City of Brass for the win because I wouldn't take the damage until after the spell resolved.
Because you can, you can tap a lightning bolt and bolt them if they're at three, and just Because here's actually the City of Brass does make sense now. Mm-hmm. It's whenever City of Brass becomes tapped, it deals one damage to you. So it doesn't deal you one damage because of the mana ability.
Yeah, exactly.
The mana ability is just add one mana. So if you had a card that said, you know, all
and it's a cold,
all triggered abilities are turned off.
Yeah.
Then you would just never take City of Brass, would just be, you know, tapped for any mana all you want because it's not part of that thing.
Yeah. The colon separates the two because the whenever it's tapped is the cost,
separate from,
and the effect is the mana. It's not like get mana and take one damage.
It's not pay one life.
Yeah.
You know, which is what I think like Grand Coliseum is.
Right.
Which is pretty much everything
now,
later on.
Right.
You know, I think from Ice Age Pain lands on, if a land dealt damage, it was tied to the ability.
Yeah.
So
City of Brass is like the only one that's.
So I'm looking at Grand Coliseum right now. Grand Coliseum says tap, add one mana of any color, and Grand Coliseum deals one damage to you. Mm-hmm. So it's not even pay one life, which is interesting. It's also damage.
Right.
I think, I feel like paying life is more of a.
Yeah.
You should see. Well, but in. With fetch lands, you pay the one life.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Which is
it's part of the
it's
cost.
One damage for pain lands, right? Like Carplusian Forest. It's. Tap,
it's one damage also.
It's
yeah,
tap
it's
for
damage,
a colorless or tap for a color, take a damage with that mana.
Right.
Yep.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. So another thing that has come up many times in this format is Decree of Justice. This is a very interesting one, and not a lot of people know how it works. And as a Stiflenaut player, I've had to, you know, be the honest person and explain to them how it works, because it does not benefit the Stifle player.
Why?
Basically, here's what most people think. Most people think, okay, they cycle their Decree of Justice. Yep. You stifle the cycle, and they don't get a card, and they don't get their tokens. Wrong. Not how it works.
Yep. Okay.
The cycling is an activated ability.
Okay, it's actually in the rulings I'm actually reading right now. Go ahead. Keep going. Mm-hmm.
The cycling is the activated ability.
Yeah.
The soldier tokens is a triggered ability from the cycling. Mm-hmm. However, if you stifle the cycling ability, they still get the trigger for the soldier tokens. So you basically, if you're the stifle player, you have to choose, do I want them to not draw cards, or do I want them to not get soldiers?
Unbelievable.
Because they're getting the other one.
Yeah. And don't pay for the soldiers until you're resolving that trigger. So you don't lose mana by if they decide to stifle, because when you're paying for the soldiers, you're already resolving the trigger. There's nowhere for them to jump in and be like, oh, time out. It's like, it's already resolving.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. It's two different costs actually. So the cycle cost is two and a white, whereas the pay for the, do you pay them at separate times? Do you technically pay for cycling and then
pay
you pay?
You technically pay them at separate times.
Do you wait until
you
the cycling?
You pay the three first to cycle the card. Then the stifle player, that's their opportunity to either counter the triggered ability, and then they will simply get to draw a card, or to counter the activated ability, and they don't get to draw the card, but the trigger goes on the stack, and then they get to choose how many, if any, soldiers they
want. Okay, so someone cycling to cure your justice, should they technically be holding priority in between, or is it just assumed?
Well, no, they lose, like you have an opportunity to stifle, you know, like they announce, I'm cycling Decree of Justice. Mm-hmm. You're technically supposed to just tap three mana. Yeah. Most people tap all their mana right away, but you're technically supposed to just tap three mana, cycle Decree of Justice, trigger on the stack. Mm-hmm. You're also technically supposed to announce trigger on the stack. And then the opponent has the opportunity to stifle.
Yep.
If they choose, the trigger resolves, and then they announce how many soldiers they want to create.
Okay, and then so do you technically get the soldiers first, or do you get the card first?
I guess you get the soldiers first. I never really thought about it, but yeah, I guess you get the soldiers first.
That matters.
Right? Because wouldn't that be
that's how the stack
the
would
order
resolve.
Of operations? Because the last thing to come off would be the cycling?
Does that sound right, Judge Andrew?
Sounds right.
Because it would
it's in the rulings.
Announce the trigger. Opponent has the opportunity to do something.
Okay, so
if they don't do anything, soldiers resolves first.
Literally, it's in the rulings from October of 2008. When you cycle this card, first the recycling ability goes on the stack, then the triggered ability goes on the stack on top of it. The triggered ability will resolve before you draw a card from the cycling ability. Wow! Dude,
there you go.
We are learning things.
There you go.
This is why we do these.
I'm glad we brought this back for this one. This has been actually very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
This is really interesting. Very cool. Very, very cool. So it's actually two different things you pay for, and people just do it all at once, and it's actually technically wrong.
Right.
Yeah. I guess there's some form of magic that like judges like to play where it's, I don't know what they call it, like hardcore magic or something, where if you like screw up a ruling, that's how you lose, as opposed to like life totals. So it's like if you don't pass priority
first
technically
to
or
mess up a ruling.
Yeah, so what, do they all play humility?
Like if you don't like pass priority or acknowledge certain thing, that's how you lose the game.
Yeah.
So like your games are over like a turn. Like if you don't like, you know, move through your phases correctly, like
don't announce the Howling Mind trigger when your opponent's draw step comes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Wow, that would be crazy.
Yeah. No, I guess I was just reading about that. I forget where I saw that, but I was just reading about that.
Yeah, I can imagine them all playing abilities.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be painful.
Just something to add, going back to, Andrew, you were 100% correct about the triggered abilities are win, whenever, or at. For activated ability, just look for a colon.
Yep.
It's going to be cost, colon, effect.
Yep. Yeah, that makes sense. Cool. And always look at the gatherer, for the official wording, because, you know, some of these cool, I think most of pre-modern is pretty good with their wordings, but, you know, some of them can be a little.
They've had a long enough time to, you know, stew and come out with understandable wording versus.
But also, we do play modern rules. You know, Google is your friend.
Yeah. Absolutely.
If you're not sure, always Google, because someone has definitely come across the situation you have come across.
And if you see it say, if you see answers from like 2004, then 2010, then 2018. Probably check the 2018 first.
Always go the most recent.
Because the old ones might be back when like damage was on the stack and stuff. So you don't know what's
going on. Well, the biggest thing is to look for post 2010.
Yep.
Because that was the last major rules change.
Yep. Yeah.
2010 was a major rules change. Sixth edition was a major rules change, which was what, 2000?
6 was 99.
99?
Yeah.
Yeah. Nerds. So anything pre 99, I probably wouldn't go with. But if it's pre 99 and it's on the internet, you might want to save it because it's a historical archive.
That's for sure. Yeah.
But for the most part, 2010 is where they really put everything together, and the past decade has been mostly the same. I mean, there have been things here and there for sure, but for the most part, post 2010 is pretty similar to right now. Has anything else come up for you guys with stifle?
I know someone didn't know what to do with their stifles and they stifled two of my enchantress triggers. That was funny.
Was it me?
I don't think so, but I think it was somebody in my pod. I was like, okay.
Sure.
One of the other things that I always think is kind of annoying is that if you go to stifle a standstill trigger, that it just puts
another standstill trigger
on the stack.
Yep.
That's one that just always bugs me. Is that it's just like, come on, like standstill's already good enough, and like I can't have like one silver.
There's no way to counter that. Come on,
exactly. Like this card is meant to counter this kind of thing, and it's just like the way that standstill's worded just really pisses me off.
And sometimes you'll get people that screw up, and it'll be like you cast something, and rather than pop and draw, they'll be like, I'll counter it. It's like, that's going to pop it for me now because the highest triggers.
Yeah.
Let
it resolve. Yeah.
It's like, just like go, okay, ancestral myself for nothing. Okay, now I counter.
I feel like I played against a landstill player who had to crack his own standstill, and I was like, yeah.
Then did he play like Black Vice? Like, shit.
No, I think I had some. I think I had enough pressure on him with like just like a 2/2, you know, and then he just like he put it down, thinking that he would draw like a man land or something to block it, and I was just like, oh, I'm just gonna keep getting in there. So eventually, he had to swords it, and I was like, I'll take the 3 cards, thanks.
That'd be a weird stasis trick to do with Black Vise. Be like, play your standstill, and then do something to pop it so they draw more cards, and be like, haha, now you died at Black Vise.
Well, is it a may trigger or is it a must?
Instead of being like, you could wait 2 turns.
No, it's definitely not a may trigger.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whenever the first spell is cast, it has to happen.
Yeah, that's cool.
I don't know what it is. I'd say like 50% of the time I play against landstill people, they forget to pop it. And I'm like, you got to pop that.
Like, I want it off. It definitely pops. Like, it's definitely.
I'm like, I want it off the board. Like, pop it, whatever.
Yeah.
Take your 3 cards.
Take them
it.
Now. I don't want it like at some strategic point. I want that stuff off the board.
Yeah, when it comes to standstill though, like it's usually just like pop it and let's keep moving. You know.
Yeah.
It's just.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
If you're trying to get them dead, like you should just kind of just pop it and try to fight through it.
Yeah, that's what I.
Yeah. Most of the time, that's the situation.
Yeah.
It's just like, all right, fine. You're getting 3 cards. I don't like it, but I have to win the game.
Yeah, I have to find a way to do it. So, cool.
I can't win the game by not playing spells.
Yeah. If you don't do it, you're going to have man lands running you over.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Cool. So I think that's Stifle.
Absolutely. Great one.
One other thing before we say goodbye, I meant to mention this at the beginning, but we received a very interesting email over the winter break.
That's right, yeah.
That apparently pre-modcast is very popular in Germany.
Yeah, so, and Sweden?
Germany and Sweden.
Yeah. We're the new David Hasselhoffs.
Yeah, apparently. Your podcast, pre-modcast, has good performance in Germany, position 11 in category games. Sweden, position 11 in category games. Switzerland, 36th. Philippines, 47th. And Denmark, 56th. So sure, there's a lot of qualifiers in there. They're particular countries, and they're all in games only.
But games is a pretty wide category, I would think, right? That's going to be a lot of games podcasts.
I'm mostly just saying this just to thank you guys out in Germany, Sweden, Switzerland, Philippines, and Denmark. Like, we love that we're getting this much downloads.
Yeah.
Like, thank you guys so much.
Yeah, it's getting, like, I always had people tell me, like, oh, I'll wake up and watch, like, one of your streams in the morning, and it's like, I guess they also wake up and like to listen to us chatting.
Listen to a podcast.
Yeah.
I normally hate to listen to my own voice or whatever, like if it's like on a message machine or anything, but like I always listen to like our episodes and I really enjoy it. Mm-hmm. Even though I just did them, like I know what happened, but it's like, oh yeah, like I remember that. Like yeah. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, I've definitely had ones where I'm like, oh, I missed that.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, very good. So
thank you guys. I mean, I had mentioned in the last, in the year end one that like, we're thrilled by how popular things are, and this just kind of reinforced that. Like, yeah. Oh my god.
Yeah, we're doing good things. We like doing it, and we're going to keep doing it. So.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Oh, and so we hope for you guys saying Hearth Charm. I just found 7.
Okay.
Oh. So all right. So you have some Hearth Charm.
I have at least 7. I might already have 11 if I already put a playset in my collection.
Very cool. Well, I'll have to so go spares. And read every single charm that was printed in pre-modern and see if I can't brew around it.
Sounds good.
But yeah, thank you guys again. Like, we love doing it and look forward to 2021.
Absolutely.
It's going to be a good year.
And February 20th for the Winter Blast. Save it.
Yes. Bingo. Oh. Pre-modern. Love it. Oh.
Get your girl something nice the weekend before so they'll let you play.
Exactly. How about girlfriend and wife credit right now?
Yeah, girlfriend and wife credit.
So, okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Later, guys.
Come on!